afternoon, everyone. My name is Jason Mwabi. I'm a breast medical oncologist at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. And I'm one of the editors at the Oncology Data Advisor. And I'm pleased to be joined today with two prominent doctors, Dr. Valerie Brutus, who is a breast surgeon at St. Vincent Medical Center in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and who specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of all benign and malignant breast diseases. She also specializes in oncoplastic techniques for breast conservation, sentinel lymph node biopsy, and skin and nipple sparing mastectomies with immediate reconstruction. I'm also joined by Dr. Elizabeth Sterling-Gregg, who is a plastic and reconstructive surgeon at St. Vincent Medical Center in Bridgeport, Connecticut. She is one of few plastic surgeons in the country who specialized in microsurgery after completing a fellowship in reconstructive microsurgery at MD Anderson Cancer Center. Dr. Gregg has extensive experience with advanced technique in microsurgery, such as what we're going to discuss today, lymphovenous bypass, flap reconstruction, oncoplastic lymph reconstruction, and reduction surgery after lumpectomy. Today, we're going to discuss a very interesting topic, and which involves lymphovenous bypass surgery. Welcome to both of you. So the first question is, we need to identify what is lymphovenous bypass surgery? How can we define it to our audience? And we can start with Dr. Brutus.
Sure. So lymphovenous bypass is a technique that actually Dr. Craig, I'll let her talk to it about more. It's basically a technique in which the lymphatics are connected to a vein in order to help drain the lymphatic fluid that would otherwise accumulate in the tissue. And this is in patients who have to have an axial node dissection in part of those and part of their procedure.
I think Valerie explained it perfectly. The only thing I would add is that it's one of a few what we call functional lymphedema surgery options that we have, in that the whole goal of the surgery is to help reestablish or reconstruct the lymphatic system. So that's just one of the ways that other people have developed lymphedema surgery to help with patients after cancer.
Perfect. Now, when you see a patient in your clinic, who qualifies? Who do you offer it to? What are things that you are looking for to know that the patient qualifies or disqualifies them from such a surgery? And we can start with Dr. Gregg.
So for patients that come to see us for lymphedema surgery, we talk to them about all the types of lymphedema surgery. The functional types of lymphedema surgery are the patients that are in close proximity to that treatment. So it's not a chronic condition that they've been dealing with perhaps 20 or 30 years, but something that has relatively recently happened to them, maybe 1 to 5 years. We then diagnose the lymphedema in various stages, and depending on the stage that they're in and whether they get improvement with things like physical therapy, then we then talk about the options that they may have for lymphedema surgery. There are two main types of lymphedema surgery that are functional. There's a lymphovenous bypass, which we're going to talk about today, and then there's a vascularized lymph node transfer, which is a little bit more aggressive of a surgical option.
And for the patients who qualify,
anything you'd like to add, Dr. Brutus?
Yes, for the patients who qualify, so me as a breast surgeon, I usually and in the first person to see patients on their initial phase of their journey for their cancer treatment. So far, we're offering immediate lymphovenous bypass in patients that we know are going to need an axial node dissection and part of the treatment. So we are reserving this immediate lymphovenous bypass as a preventive method in patients who have inflammatory breast cancer, patient presenting with axillary breast cancer, patient who have poor prognosis or poor response to chemotherapy. So these are node positive patients who are undergoing neoadjuvant chemotherapy with poor prognostic response. So we know that those patients are going to need to have a dissection part of their treatment, but also this lymphedema risk is going to be higher because they also will need postoperative chest wall radiation. So when those patients, I see them identified, you know, I see them knowing that this is probably a possibility. Those patients are seeing throughout their neoadjuvant treatment. then depending on their treatment response or the type of cancer, you know, they are referred earlier on throughout their journey, because we know this is going to be something that's going to be part of their surgical treatment and the hopes to decrease the risk of lymphedema.
Perfect. So since we already jumped into it, I want to ask the question officially. Is it more beneficial to perform it as a prophylactic measure at the time of breast surgery, or is it better to do it in a delayed fashion when lymphedema occurs? And can you speak to the success, which one is better, doing it at the time of surgery or later on?
Well, I can start and I'll let Dr. Craig finish. I think, you know, we all the data we have is sort of perspective. We don't have anything comparing, you know, not doing lymphovenous bypass versus doing lymphovenous bypass. I think since we know that this is something that, you know, a very big morbidity and also has a serious negative impact on patients' quality of life. So anything that I think should be offered as a prevention, you know, it would be definitely the way to go. Because so far, you know, once the lymphedema is established, you know, I'll let Dr. Craig discuss which few treatment, you know, can be proposed to those patients. But we unfortunately know so far that, you know, there is no cure for lymphedema. So this is why, you know, we're really trying to do this, you know, as a prevention. And I think, you know, there are some data to suggest that definitely, you know, this offers a benefit. But of course, as time goes by, I'm sure that those data is going to corroborate, you know, the benefit that this can in decreasing the severity of lymphedema in those patients who are at high risk.
Exactly. So I'd like to equate it to when you have, let's say, a leak of a pipe in your house, you know, so we know that when you have water that leaks out one of the pipes in your house and it starts to affect the walls and then sometimes the ceilings. In this case, if we do it immediately, we actually identify exactly where that leak is and we plug it immediately. We also know from a lot of studies that the lymphedema fluid in and of itself is very inflammatory. It's very reactive. So having that fluid leak out in any degree, we know, can cause scarring. Scarring is also going to impact the functionality of the remaining lymphatics. So I think from a conceptual standpoint, it makes the most sense to try to identify any problem we would have as it is occurring and identify it and essentially take care of it. There are preliminary studies that do show that in patients in comparable cohorts, they are retrospective. For patients that are going to have a full axillary lymph node dissection and radiation therapy, if we do an immediate lymphovenous bypass, it decreases the risk of postoperative lymphedema by 5 times. So I think a lot of it has to do, again, about just trying to limit the amount of leakage of that fluid, because it's that fluid that really is the most caustic to the whole lymphatic system.
Perfect. Perfect. So how do you assess the patient risk of lymphedema? So that's the most important step, right? To see if they qualify for the procedure. So what are things that you are looking for to assess the risk of lymphedema? And if you can give us number, that'd be great, like percentages.
So I think, you know, when we sort of look for general cause, you know, lymphedema, so we know that patient, you know, who have elevated BMI are at increased risk for having lymphedema. You know, it's also if patient had lymphedema, for example, of the lower extremity that is not caused by any known medical condition. So those patients, you know, with sort of idiopathic lymphedema, so definitely those patients are going to be patients that we know are going to be high risk. And I also think that, you know, once we also know, you know, the risk of Taxol are going to give lymphedema patient who had prior radiation or prior surgery. So these are things that when we do our initial patient evaluations, all those questions that we go through, and then we address the disease process to say, okay, do we have axillary disease or not? How much of it? Is it bulky, non-bulky? So these are all things that we sort of do as initial assessment to say, who is someone that's already has increased risk for lymphedema, and knowing that our treatment is going to further, you know, exacerbate that risk. So this is how we identify patient. I think, you know, to know numbers, so I know historically what's been cited is, you know, patients who are undergoing axillary dissection and are going to have, you know, additional radiation, they're going to probably have about a 35 to 40% risk of having lymphedema. But of course, that varies by the different patient's population. So we know that some patients that risk might be higher and lower. So the way we assess those patients is one, to identify which are the patients who are at risk. Two, which patients that we know that are gonna require an intervention that's going to further exacerbate the risk. We refer all our patients to physical therapy, you know, throughout their treatment, just to also have the patient educated about the lymphedema risk. And then when it's time for the patient to have, you know, part of their surgical treatment, Dr. Craig and I, you know, have worked very well together. And we sort of, you know, both of us evaluate the patient, at, you know, throughout the patient's treatment, just to see if this patient is a candidate. And this is when, you know, more discussions are being, you know, offered to patients about, you know, this procedure. You know, I'll let her speak, you know, to that. But I think so far, you know, as a team, we've been very successful. All the patients that, you know, unfortunately are known to have increased lymphedema, when we're presenting them, you know, this option, I think the patients are very excited and very grateful that they have an option that, you know, can further decrease their risk, because, you know, I think most patients now are aware, you know, of what lymphedema is and how also the negative impact it can have on their quality of life.
Exactly. So I think that Valerie does a fantastic job identifying the patients ahead of time that will likely be at risk. And then along the way, there's a constant dialogue between the oncologist, myself, and Valerie as to whether the patient would meet criteria or would benefit from it. Like we said, there really is no downside to it. We don't want to be necessarily in the armpit if we don't have to be there for even that much longer. This surgery in and of itself takes about 30 minutes. So it's not like we're in there, you know, for a lengthy period of time. So we really try to get in and out, and we're really trying to minimize any scarring or any more presence than we have to be there.
Just because the audience like numbers like myself. So let's say the risk of lymphedema is 50%. How much risk reduction are we anticipating from such a procedure?
Like, if hypothetical you go by case,
a patient presents with a 50% risk of lymphedema, what do you tell the patient? What is, in an ideal scenario, how lower of a risk reduction are you expecting from such a procedure?
So say the patient we think is going to be at risk of developing lymphedema by 50%. We would say in the best circumstances, we would decrease their risk to 10%.
And how successful is such a procedure? Like, what's the success rate of undergoing a lymphovenous bypass?
So we know the success rate intraoperatively only because we're able to inject a dye that targets or shows us it actually fluoresces lymphatic fluid. As soon as we identify the areas where it's leaking, like I said, it's kind of a pipe. We plug the pipe into the vein, we irrigate the area, and then we inject the dye again. And the whole goal is that there's no leakage at all. So the surgery is relatively new. We don't have long, you know, 5-year studies quite yet to discern necessarily what that risk is going to be long-term. But immediately in the operating room, you identify the leak, you take care of it. And the goal is that you don't leave until it's taken care of.
Perfect. Now, the other question that somebody might ask is, let's say we're not doing it prophylactically. Let's say we're doing it because lymphedema is established. Two questions comes here. How long does it take to see the benefit? And when do we say it's not beneficial? Like, if we don't see improvement, after how long we would say it wasn't a successful procedure? Number one. Number two, if symptoms are available, so if patient is having discomfort, pain, redness, swelling, do we expect those symptoms to go away? And what symptoms you would expect to improve, and which one will not improve with such a procedure? And this question is for both.
So I can start. So when, you know, part of our follow-up for our patients, you know, all patients, we always do, you know, limb measurements to assess for lymphedema. We also have a lymphedema questionnaire that assesses, you know, the patient's perception of lymphedema, and if this is present, the impact it has on the quality of life. So by doing that, you know, we really want to try to identify the lymphedema as early as possible. You know, we know that with the different stage of lymphedema, once a patient gets to a late stage, which is, I think, stage 4, when there's fibrosis, So definitely there's not a lot of treatments that are available at this time. So ideally we would like to offer this to patients, you know, if patients did not have the option to have this as a prevention, in patients who started to have early on symptoms, because we know that with all the data that we have for lymphedema treatment, early intervention, whether it was before, you know, by external techniques such as massage or compression garments or any types of other garments that could help, you know, stimulate the lymphatic massage, have all shown us that the earlier we can intervene, you know, for lymphedema, the better the chance of success. So what we're doing now is being very aggressively monitoring our patients for signs of lymphedema. Of course, once the patient starts to have early signs of lymphedema, surgery is not the first step. You know, until this patient gets referred to physical therapy, we are very lucky to have, you know, lymphedema trained physical therapies that we work with very closely. So if those patients, you know, continue to, I would say, progress, you know, despite aggressive, you know, physical therapy, I think those patients are the one that we definitely start to consider to talking about, you know, surgical intervention with them.
How long do you wait?
And this is like, where I send them
you know,
to
for example, for bariatric surgery, it's 6 months with a dietitian before we do it. Here, how long do you wait for PT to take effect before taking up surgery?
I think it's going to be, you know, definitely between 6 months to a year, you know, because we know that there's different ways, you know, to evaluate the patient's arm measurements, but all the measurements agree that once there's a difference in 10% of the lymph volume, lymphedema is present. And we know that with the physical therapy, we have to give them, you know, at least 6 months to try to see, you know, if there is any progression. So I would say that, you know, if the patients are, you know, when we have to make sure that the patient is compliant, that there's no contraindication for them to get physical therapy, and that, you know, they're really following all the recommendation, wearing a sleeve and following all lymphedema precaution. And I think, you know, those patients are usually measured pre-treatment, post-treatment, they're remeasured after 6 months, 9 months to a year. So I think we need to at least have two measurements to say that there is progression of this lymphedema despite treatment before we start to discuss, you know, surgical intervention with those patients.
Perfect. Dr. Greg, same question to you. If we're doing the surgery as a delayed fashion, so when lymphedema has already occurred, what is the time frame we expect to see improvement in patient? And does it, what symptoms does it alleviate and which symptoms will it would not alleviate of lymphedema?
That's a good question. I think as Valerie was saying, the key really is this constant dialogue between us, oncology, and the lymphedema physical therapist. So if the lymphedema physical therapist believes that really they have plateaued, then they are pretty quick to reach out to our team to institute a surgical intervention because it's clear that they are not having any improvement. From a physiologic standpoint, because that lymphatic fluid is so inflammatory and it induces scar, we want to intervene sooner rather than later so we can prevent that area from leaking. So we can try to have the lymphatic system up and working so that there's a minimal amount of fluid that's irritating the existing lymphatics. So when I was at MD Anderson, we would try to say, you know, between 6 months and a year of essentially physical therapy plateauing, you want to intervene surgically. So just like any reconstruction, the sooner the better that you can get in there, the more success rate you will have. With between the two types of lymphedema surgery, the lymphovenous bypass and the vascularized lymph node transfer, the studies are quite variable, but for the most part, early stage one, three, you know, through three, will undergo lymphovenous bypass because there is no downside to it whatsoever. It will never increase your risk of worsening lymphedema. It does not place you at risk of infection. So there's little hindrance to undergo that type of surgery. If anything, it can only make it better. If you go by the studies, it's about 60 to 80% of patients that undergo lymphovenous bypass will have some improvement. In my experience, you'll see most of that improvement within the first 6 months. And at about 9 months to a year, it plateaus. If you see them, which I do at about a year, that's as good as it's going to get. You can do repeat lymphovenous bypass, which is not something you can do with the vascularized lymph node transfer. So it's not uncommon for us to stack lymphovenous bypass on patients. In essence, the patient comes back every year, has improvement of a certain area, and comes back again the following year to have lymphovenous bypass, let's say in a more proximal area. And eventually, hopefully, you get to the point of whatever their goal is, whether it's wearing a shorter sleeve or not wearing a sleeve at all, as long as they're seeing some improvement, we can continue to do lymphovenous bypass because we know we're not impacting the large lymphatic systems, we're impacting the small lymphatic systems. We're trying to offload the larger system so that it can function better in essence. But the vascularized lymph node transfer is reportedly more successful. You'll see reports between 80 to 90%. The problem with that is oftentimes those patients, you have to wait at least 18 months, so a year and a half to see any improvement. So that's not ideal in somebody who is, you know, at stage three, because very quickly you hope that by the time that lymph node starts working, maybe it's not in a favorable environment that could even function.
Perfect. Now, I know we talked about that here and there, but I really want to ask about the technique a little bit and the times. I know we said half an hour, but I want to re-emphasize about those in this question. So let's talk a little bit more about the technique. So we said there is two different surgeries that we can do. We can do either the bypass itself, or we can do a lymph node transplantation. Where do we harvest those lymph nodes from? Where do we get them from? Can it be done at the same time of surgery, of breast surgery, or it has to be done at separately? How much each procedure adds to the breast surgery procedure? So if we can talk about them in the session, it'll be excellent.
Sure. The lymphovenous bypass can be done immediately. And like I said, it doesn't add that much extra time. It's done about maybe extra 30 minutes or so. The vascularized lymph node transfer, usually if you're doing it, for example, a breast cancer patient where they have lymphedema of the arm, you're going to try to borrow a lymph node from another place in their body. And that's oftentimes in the leg. You can borrow it from different places in the next to the clavicle, kind of below the mental area. Those scars are not very well accepted by Americans. So most of those surgeries are done in Asia and other countries. But the majority of the vascularized lymph node transfers and the United States are done in the groin. So we do reverse lymphatic mapping to identify the lymph nodes that are draining the leg and the lymph nodes that are draining the abdomen, and ideally take just a few, one or two lymph nodes that are draining the abdomen and not the leg. The goal is to avoid, obviously, incurring lymphedema on a poor lymphedema patient in another limb. So that's why we do the reverse lymphatic mapping, and we do it at the same time as breast surgery if essentially Dr. Brutus thinks that would be the best thing for the patient. It really is one opportunity that you have to transfer that lymph node. So that's where I really rely on Dr. Brutus and the oncologist to tell me what they think the patient's going to need for treatment and whether they would recommend that we do that immediately at the time of the mastectomy, or is that something we really should reserve until they are done with their treatment?
Anything you'd like to add, Dr. Brutus?
So my part so far, I've only worked with Dr. Cregan doing, you know, immediate lymphovenous bypass. So my, you know, when we do the reverse lymphatic mapping, that's probably one of the most important part, you know, of the procedure, because it really first help us identify, you know, which lymphatics that we can safely spare, you know, because even when we're doing, you know, lymph node dissection, we try to, some lymphatics, you know, if they're not connected to lymph node that we have to remove. So if you can spare those lymphatic, we spare them. That also helps us identify if we have a larger lymphatic channel. We usually try to dissect them as close to lymph node as possible, so we can at least preserve some of the length of those lymphatics. You know, so all of those are things that, you know, it's really important to have just a good communication to know why are we doing this, what lymphatic that we can spare, the one that we cannot spare. If we try to preserve the length of those lymphatics, that we tag them during, you know, after they're cut, you know, as long as possible, they're tagged, so to see if those lymphatics can be patterned to be reconstructed. You know, also when we're trying to dissect, you know, veins, we usually try to at least leave some tail of the vein, not cut it too short, so we can preserve the length and just to allow, you know, to have at least amount of tension as possible. You know, Dr. Craig, when she does it, you know, most of the time she used, you know, a vein patch just to help alleviate this tension, you know, on the connection. And, you know, so far, you know, our patients, you know, are they're having a pretty good, you know, postoperative experience. We do a lot of, you know, nerve blocks before they start. We have a very good pain management team that's on board. And those patients, you know, are very comfortable. And it's just add an extra half an hour, you know, when to the procedure after the dissection is performed.
Amazing. Very insightful. So we talked about the benefit of such procedure, and I've heard you very well that it's very well tolerated, but what are some of the side effects of such a procedure, both short-term and long-term, that somebody should be at the lookout for?
I think probably the short-term, you know, side effects, you know, the patient's going to have an extra scar in the leg if we do, you know, the vein patch. So, you know, they have a donor site that they have to heal from. Honestly speaking, I think in terms of other short-term side effects, there's not a lot, because it's probably the side effects all get looped into the regular side effects that we're going to have from a dissection point. You know, so most of the discomfort and pain, you know, just from the lymph node removal themselves per se, the reconnection, you know, of those lymphatics does not really create, you know, a bigger problem. Of course, whenever you're dealing with lymphatic anastomosis, you can always have, you know, bleeding, you know, from those connections or leakage from those connections. So I think that could definitely be considered, you know, as a possible, you know, immediate, you know, side effects. But I think in those procedures, you know, where we're already working closer, you know, to major vessel, for us, you know, being crucial and careful in our dissection, you know, is key. So I feel like when we're working, we're already, you know, so concerned to preserve the length of the lymphatics, the length of the vein. We're very concerned to have, you know, very great hemostasis, so not to have any complication from the surgery cells per se. So I think, you know, overall, the immediate side effects are, you know, very, very minimal. Long-term, I think also, you know, they're going to get lumped into, you know, the complication that we're creating from having an extra dissection. So a lot of patients after this procedure always report, you know, some heaviness of the arm. They have restriction, you know, for the first 2 weeks with movement. So they get some shoulder stiffness. So that's why we're very aggressive. And we have a very good PT team that, you know, once they're cleared, they get referred for range of motion exercise. So I feel that this small connection itself per se, you know, we both of us don't see it such as, you know, an extra step that's going to add, you know, an additional complication, you know, for the procedure.
No, I agree. Oftentimes when we're talking to the patients, they sometimes say, is there a catch? And I really don't think that there is one in this situation. You're already going to be in the armpit. So just merely taking an extra half hour to, you know, reconnect things really does not place the patient at additional risk. And I think that's why Valerie and I are both really passionate about trying to get the word out about this for patients, because there really is such a little downside to it. It just doesn't take that long. The patients seem to do great. And if it is as impactful as we think it is, I think it really could help with the growing population of lymphedema patients that we have.
Perfect. Just one last question. For our patient and patient advocates that are listening, how widely available is this procedure? And is it reimbursable by commercial insurance and by Medicare or Medicaid?
So it is a billable service from a provider standpoint. You know, so it obviously that changes regionally, but since it is covered by Medicare, usually CMS will kind of follow suit, and the commercial providers will reimburse for it as well. That doesn't necessarily mean that every institution is going to be trained in it and offering it. Certainly large cancer institutions like ours, like MD Anderson, Dana-Farber, it's kind of a growing procedure. I would say, you know, it's rather in its infancy. The preliminary results, I think everybody is very excited about. And that's why Valerie and I, you know, talk a lot about it and like try to get the word out amongst the patients so that they can be their best advocate and request it wherever they are.
Anything like that, Dr. Brutus?
No, I completely agree. And I think, you know, it's great that we're able to offer this, you know, types of procedure. I said, Vincent, you know, medical center, you know, of course, not all patients have access to go to a big cancer center, but I think having this done, you know, locally, it's really good. And I think patients just have to know, you know, what their options are. and to also understand, you know, to why is it beneficial, and just know that this is an option for a patient that we know who have, you know, either increased, we're going to have increased risk for lymphedema, or already have lymphedema, you know, from pre-existing cancer treatment.
I mean, this has been great. I can tell you from my experience with my patient, it's been like godsend procedure. It really helped patient and really improved their outcome drastically. Any last remarks before we conclude?
Yeah, I think when as the data is going to start, you know, to come along, it's probably going to be a practice changing, you know, procedure. I think it's going to be something like the same way, you know, when sentinel node biopsy came to try to, you know, to try to downstage and offer a patient, you know, less aggressive procedure or decrease the morbidity of the procedure that we have to do. I feel like as the data is going to come, this is something that's going to be offered pretty sort of routinely to all patients who has to still undergo axillary dissection, or patients, you know, who have progressive lymphedema that is from their treatment that's not improving by physical therapy.
Yes, Mark? No, I would just echo what Valerie says, and feel free to reach out to us if you're in the state of Connecticut or if you have any other questions. We're here to help, absolutely.
Of course.
Thank you. Well, that's been great. Thank you for all our audience for listening in today, and I want to thank Dr. Brutus and Dr. Gregg for joining us in this very interesting discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Have a nice day.
Our pleasure.